Committee will come to order. We're not quite a quorum yet, but I suspect we will be. Are we a quorum? Okay, good. Representative Hornstein, you look very alert, like perhaps you've read the minutes this morning.
I'll move them, thank you.
Can you take a quick look and move those minutes?
Sure.
These will be the minutes from February 15th.
They look good to me, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hornstein moves adoption of the minutes from Thursday, February 15th. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Members, today we're going to hear four bills. I am going to be moving pretty aggressively, so for our testifiers, I hope you heard that. Please be concise and to the point. But let's have a very good discussion today. Before I do that, I want to remind you that this Friday, the Department of Ed is conducting a symposium on the value-added model. It's going to be held at the department's offices in Roseville. The symposium runs from 8:30 till 4:45. It's for legislators and legislative staff only. Registration is required, so if you're planning to go, please let them know. But it is free for all legislators or their designated staff and includes lunch and materials. I do have some flyers here, and so perhaps let me just distribute those around. But you've probably received this notice in your emails in the last week or so. We had laid over members House File 302, Representative Peterson's E-12 linkages bill. We are not going to take up that bill today. Representative Peterson is actually working on an author's amendment due in large part to your constructive observations and criticisms and advice. And so we hope to be able to bring that bill up and perhaps another early childhood bill next week. Today we're going to hear bills regarding rigorous college preparatory curriculum through the delivery of the Advanced Placement International Baccalaureate and College in the Schools programs. This is in large part in keeping with our opening theme this legislative session of the need to close achievement gaps. And so I hope that as we hear those bills today, that we keep that in mind in terms of our interactions with the testifiers. For the testifiers, I hope that you'll be able to share with us how these proposals would help to bring in new students and involvement in these more rigorous course options. If perhaps you can also speak to us about comparisons across the different options, whether or not you think these are really the best approaches. As policymakers, we need to be struggling with what are the most cost-effective and appropriate approaches to helping to drive rigor in our schools. And then also, if you can speak to us a little bit about the current context, there have been some changes in the last couple of years in regards to AP courses and state support for that. And if you can speak to those issues, we'd greatly appreciate it. With that, we're going to begin with House File 804, Representative Atkins. If you can step forward and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Joe Atkins, happy to be here. As I mentioned earlier, this is my maiden voyage before the House Education Committee. In my fifth year, this is the first bill I've ever had up, so I'm hoping that my maiden voyage will be more like the Love Boat than Gilligan's Island, but we'll find out.
Representative Atkins, as you and I were talking about earlier, I indicated that your whole legislative career has built up to this one moment before our committee.
So, yeah.
You made it. Congratulations. The chair would move your bill. The chair moves House File 804 be recommended to pass and refer it to Finance Committee, and I believe our recommendation to them would be to re-refer it to the K-12 Finance Committee. So with that, your bill is before us, Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll give a brief overview, and then I have some excellent witnesses to provide testimony who will all testify in an aggressive manner to in deference to the committee's time. I know you're going to hear a lot this morning. A brief overview of House File 804 is that it expands funding for AP and pre-AP. It also adds International Baccalaureate programs. I know you're familiar with that. In the parlance, it's referred to as IB. These courses are wonderful courses, not just for advanced kids, but for virtually all kids. It raises all ships. One thing that I will call your attention to in particular is the fact that with the $1 million in additional funding that went into place last budget cycle, the number of low-income students that took AP exams went in 2005 from 816 exams to 8,390 exams, literally a tenfold increase. My hope is that we can build on that. Also, notably, even students that don't get college credit, they don't score a 3 or a 4 on their AP or IB exam, the findings show that upon going to college, they are still better ready, more ready, for college learning than students that have not taken AP or IB courses. With that, Your Honor, I will turn it over to my first witness, Dr. Babbitt from South St. Paul Schools.
Wonderful. Welcome, Dr. Babbitt. If you can identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
My name is Dana Babbitt. I'm superintendent of South St. Paul Schools. And it's a pleasure to be here this morning and thank all of you for your time. And we really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about AP and IB. I'm going to concentrate mostly on IB, and I'm going to go very quickly because I have two parents that I think you're going to want to hear more from them than you probably want to hear from me. But if I could just go through the materials just very briefly that we passed out to you, you'll find a folder that looks like this. It is the with South St. Paul logo on the top, which is the apple with the world inclusive. Because we're trying to be the first school district in the state that's K-12 International Baccalaureate, and there's some very good reasons for that. For those that do not know much about IB, we've included what the primary years program is, and it's just a very quick overview of the primary years program, which is K-6, the middle years program, which is 7-10, and the diploma program, which is 11th and 12th grade. We also have myths and facts about the International Baccalaureate Organization attached to that. You've heard some negative testimony about International Baccalaureate in past years. This is some facts to combat that. On the right-hand side, you'll see two letters. We have tons of letters, but here are two of them. And one dated December 20th, 2006. This was a student from last year. She's a freshman at Stanford. Was just talking about, I've been challenged academically on new levels by my professors and peers, but I've not felt overwhelmed thanks to South St. Paul High School and its International Baccalaureate program. And so she's talked about that. On February 3rd, 2007, we received a letter from Siglindy Peterson, who's a 1993 graduate, and in her letter, thanks to my IB diploma and credits, I was able to complete the degree and pre-med curriculum in 3 years. So with her IB, her first year was basically waived at college, which is the case of most situations with the IB diploma. In addition to that, you'll find a brief excerpt from the Assistant Deputy Secretary for the Office of Innovation and Improvement in the U.S. Department of Education. And then there it talks about this is why programs such as International Baccalaureate is vitally important. It should come to no surprise that a recent Newsweek listing of the top 500 schools in America included 7 IB diploma programs in the top 10. So of the top 10 schools in America, 7 of them were IB programs. And then there's a little why South St. Paul is doing this. One for the primary years, one for the middle years. And then behind that is this is something we put out to our parents explaining. And this is a good one because it talks about international mindedness, which you hear about a lot. And I think we should be. In today's market, we do need to be concerned about the rest of the world. And this is something we send out to parents 6 times and talks about education there. So that's something for you to study at another time. Much more important than that is to hear from 2 of our parents, and I'll let them introduce themselves. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, and please just identify yourself on the record and offer us your testimony. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Krista Edson, and I have a recent graduate from South St. Paul. He's a freshman at the U, sophomore in credits in engineering program at the University of Minnesota. Also have an eighth grader that we're looking at the high school situation. 4 years ago, we found out we were moving to Minnesota from Vancouver, Washington. First thing I did was get on the computer and the phone and research international baccalaureate because my son was already enrolled in that in Vancouver. There was no other school that we looked at. Nothing else was acceptable because it is the most rigorous, well-rounded program available in high schools today. So I researched all the schools offering the program in Minnesota. I flew out and visited six of the programs, narrowed it down to three, then brought out my son who looked at programs, talked to teachers, talked to coaches, talked to students, went to classes, and he chose where he'd go to school. At that point, we started looking for houses. Never once in my mind realized what a wonderful program I got into in South St. Paul. Now as a three-year veteran of that program, I absolutely know it is fabulous. It's a hidden gem in the state. The only thing I found missing at the time was a parent group, somebody who can toot the horn for the district that wasn't paid by the district. So we started a parent group 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and our function is to educate ourselves about IB and about what our kids are doing, speak for the district, and try to encourage more people to get involved in an IB program because, as we've seen what our children have done, what a fabulous program it is.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Mafuza Ali. I have two daughters. One is Nora Ali. Second one is Liza. They both go to South Central High School. And I hope it's okay to brag. You can see my proud parent of two kids goes to Harvard. Nora is going to go to Harvard this fall, and she got accepted through early action. She's a senior at South Central High School.
Congratulations, Ms. Ali. There are no parents on this committee who brag about their kids. That's a wonderful accomplishment.
We are very proud of it, yes, and especially the program they are going through is highly regarded by colleges, especially, I must say, the requirement for IB diploma, which no other program offers, which are TOK, theory of knowledge, teaches you how to think, and the CAS is creativity, action, and services that makes you a whole person, that teaches you how to help people and also how to have something beyond your academics. Those are the requirements, so you have to do it. So it teaches you, trains you, and you can use it for your life. And the second one is you have to write extended essay, which is if you go to Harvard every day, you have to write an essay. And it's so rigorous program. And Harvard really recognized, I can speak for Harvard because we went through many information sessions. And so they told us this is the program. We know how rigorous this program is. So kids comes to our school through that program is really does very well. So when my second one interviewed for Harvard admission, they didn't even ask what is school, you know, what kind of courses you are taking. When they saw she's in IB program, they said, we know what this IB program is all about. It's internationally recognized, and you take a standardized test, and if you do well, that means you are highly educated. So I cannot tell you enough how important and how this program makes your kid to prepare them not only for college, for entire life. You can utilize all the training you go through for IB program for make you a better person in this world. That's all I have to say for this program. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ali. And Ms. Ali and Ms. Edson, you were both attracted to the program because of notions of rigor. It also sounds you were attracted to the programs because there was a role for you as parents to play in the delivery of the program. And it also sounds to me like you were also attracted to programs because you want to be able to place your child in a global context in terms of knowledge and rigor. Is that correct? Why don't you just step forward and just give us a quick affirmation on the record or correction.
Yes, I think also, Mrs. Edson, I think you're absolutely correct. Rigor is critical in this day and age. Test scores are dropping. Colleges are remediating kids because they can't read and have math issues. And IB does not let that happen. We have a global economy. look how many people now, we just take Shanghai, how many offices there are and how many American companies, employees are there. We teach kids how to think globally in the IB program. So it's absolutely critical, yes.
Thank you. Thank you both for your testimony and congratulations on your children's success in school. Welcome. Good morning.
Send the Atkins kids over to their house too.
Noted, Representative Atkins.
Good morning. Okay. I'm Dr. Deborah Bowers. I am the superintendent in St. Louis Park School District. For the last couple of years at St. Louis Park High School has been identified as one of the top 1,000 high schools in the nation because of the number of students that we have participating in both International Baccalaureate and Advanced Placement. That the numbers of students who have been taking tests have increased since 2002 by over 40% in both of those areas. So I just wanted to speak to the fact that they can coexist very nicely of having rigorous coursework. The governor came and visited parents and staff a couple of years ago, and he asked one of the high school IB teachers, what do we need to do in order to help to have more students participate in rigorous coursework? And she said, what our school district and school districts across the state need to do is to begin much earlier. And as Dana Babbitt and I both talked about, is that we are both looking at beginning much earlier, all the way back in the primary years program. In fact, that we have all four of our schools, we have one international, or we have four schools that are looking at International Baccalaureate, and then we have a Spanish immersion. So in our school district, we have an umbrella of cultural. We know how important that being a part of this multicultural world is. And in order to compete with China and India, we know that our students for today need to have these skills. I just would like to share a quote from one of our elementary principals about PYP, which is the Primary Years Program for IB. It seeks to develop students who are inquirers, thinkers, communicators, risk-takers, knowledgeable, principle-carried, open-minded, well-balanced. And it's my opinion that that's what our schools are already about. What I think has been really exciting is as we've had teachers trained, is that I found a new exuberance and energy going into the classroom. As they've looked at the core elements that need to be taught, it's about inquiry, it's about teaching kids to think, but it also allows us to adapt the curriculum within the state standards to engage every student in learning. So I just would say that I strongly support that this is the way to have our kids ready to have the skills for the 21st century. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bowers.
I have some comments. If I didn't bring enough for everyone, but I've got facts that show that the increase in test scores and about why that we chose to go towards PYP at our school district.
Thank you, Dr. Bowers. I'm struck by your sharing of how the benefit to your teachers as well in terms of perhaps a new level of energy around a process of teaching students how to think. And so it seems like there's multiple benefits that you've derived. You've got a pretty, if I recall, you have a pretty diverse district and growing in that regard. Have you seen any changes in recent years in terms of the diversity of students involved in these kind of rigorous course offerings?
We have an African-American advocacy program that we started just a year ago, so it really is at its infancy. But what we have, I just talked to two of the people who are working with students in this area. We've gone from having 8 students at our high school that were interested in advanced placement programs, International Baccalaureate, to 24. So that's 3 times the growth in 1 year. And we're hoping to continue that. And when I ask them, you know, what's the difference, is that the kids need to believe in themselves that they, too, that everyone can take advanced coursework. And what I like about beginning at the early years program is it's for everybody. Everyone then would have this idea that they're able to take more difficult, challenging, rigorous coursework that's international in flavor. I wanted to also mention why that we could benefit from the help with these bills is that one of the most expensive things for IB is its training. You can't sign up at Hamline or go to the University of Minnesota for training. You have to send them to, you have to send your staff to places that are IB sanctioned. And so that is very expensive. And the startup costs are the most difficult for us.
And Dr. Bowers, as you look at Representative Atkins' bill, is part of the intent here to be able to provide for the resources for districts to be able to deliver that kind of training and afford that kind of training?
Yes, it's a great match.
Okay, wonderful. Professor Atkins.
Thank you.
You have other folks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, I think there's just a couple left to testify. For Minnetonka.
Good morning.
Hello, I'm Janice Kutakowski. I'm the Communications Director, and I'm sitting in for Dr. Ann Swanson. Today happens to be the day that the 4,000-word extended essay is due in Minnetonka of all of our IB students. So Dr. Swanson is sorry that she could not be here, but she's accepting those essays from her students this morning. I do have with me two of our International Baccalaureate students to talk about their experience. But before they come up, I'd just like to mention a few things. Minnetonka entered the International Baccalaureate Program in 2004, and in 2006 graduated our first six IB students. When we brought that program in, we brought it in kind of after registration had started, so we started very small. With 25 students total in the program, six focused on the IB diploma. For the 2006-2007 current school year, we now have 211 students enrolled in the IB program. So it's grown rapidly, been very well received by the community. At the same time, our AP program has grown phenomenally. We started in 2004 with 317 students taking AP exams, and in 2006, 551 students took AP exams. So we are here to say that both programs can coexist and actually complement each other. AP and IB serve different types of learners. An AP program goes very quickly and has a lot of acceleration and allows students to specialize in different fields. You can take AP and specialize in math or science. The IB program encourages students to have a well-rounded commitment to their education and requires them to address both their strengths in their specialty areas and perform at high levels of rigor in their weaker areas. So you have to cover the entire curriculum at a high level. And I'll introduce to you first Casey Garvey Hall, who is one of our IB students, and she'll talk to that point.
Thank you. Good morning. Welcome. Please state your name for the record and give us your thoughts.
Good morning. My name is Casey Garvey Hall. I'm a senior and a full diploma student in the International Baccalaureate Program. I knew I was going to join the IB program before IB was even offered at Minnetonka High School. I loved the way that it was described as you get to learn things at a deeper level instead of just a base level and learning a lot of different curriculum. That is the type of learning that works best for me, because for me to fully understand it works best. And so IB requires that you're able to do that. Besides in my biology class, I haven't had a multiple choice test since my sophomore year. And so that requires me to understand fully almost all aspects of the curriculum that I'm learning. And I think that that's an excellent thing, because it helps us to understand things fully instead of just at a basic level and hoping that we can get by just filling in the correct bubbles. IB has pushed myself to challenge, or pushed me to challenge myself in a variety of different ways. The biggest way for me has been because I was not strong in science and math. I did not take those as challenging courses my freshman and sophomore year. And by entering into the full diploma program, I have taken HL biology and SL math, but SL math is still incredibly rigorous, and it's pushed me to work on my weaknesses as well as my strengths. As Janet mentioned, we had our extended essays due today, and that allows students to choose a topic of their choice and write 4,000 words on it. I chose to write mine on how to rebuild the New Orleans school district so that it supports its students. Other people chose to write about green roofs. Other people chose to write about the history of punk rock and magic cards. And I think that any program that allows students to create such an individualized program, yet that's still rigorous, is an excellent thing to have at a school. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you for your testimony, Casey. By the way, in the latest Harper's Magazine, there's a wonderful article on the rebuilding of the New Orleans schools. You might want to check it out.
She might have written it.
I would not doubt that, Representative Atkins. Good morning. Welcome. Give us your name for the record. And
my name is Mitch Eric Bibikoser, and I'm also an IB student at the Minnetonka High School. Before I got into IB in 11th grade, my 9th and 10th grade classes were all G or general level classes that we have at Minnetonka High School. So moving up into the IB program was, a really big challenge for me, but it's something that really pushed me to address all of my strengths and all of my weaknesses and really get me interested in learning and understand what I'm learning. The biggest contrast that I found going from G to IB classes was that in G classes, you really are told facts and you're told dates in history classes, but then when you move up to IB classes, you understand what that stuff means, and you're able to take what you learn in history class and apply it to why books were written in that time period in our literature classes. So that's just really been a great thing to be able to learn at that level. And as far as the challenge that I talked about, it's a really great feeling to be able to work so hard on something that you like and something that, like Casey mentioned, is individualized to your person and something that you really enjoy, and being able to reach those goals and being able to see yourself achieving at a very high level of learning. And also, as I mentioned, how everything kind of overlaps. We have a class called TLK, which was mentioned a little earlier. That's just really great. It's what I like to say is one of my strengths in the IB program. And it really encourages us to integrate our classes. And it's been said a couple times this morning that it teaches us how to think. And just on that point, I'd like to say that it teaches us it teaches us the process of thinking, and it teaches us ideas behind why people think the way they do. And it really allows us to develop as a person, not only in education, but into what we believe in an individualized sense. So, thank you.
Terrific. Thank you, Mitch. Representative Atkins, terrific testimony. We've had administrators, we've parents and teachers who have come and shared their insights on IBAP course offerings. Language in your bill, does this mirror the governor's approach?
It does, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so essentially you've got a good chunk of the governor's proposals in your bill. We do have a couple of questions from members, and then I want to see if there are other folks who want to testify. Representative Erdahl and Representative Wardlaw.
Representative Erdahl. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I'm a graduate of St. Cloud State, which some of us refer to as the Harvard of the Midwest.
I've always referred to it that way, Representative Erdahl.
Sure you have.
Question of Dr. Babbitt.
Dr. Babbitt?
Yes, sir.
Representative Rudolph.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Babbitt, do you receive any outside funding from the IBO or?
Nothing. Okay. No, you actually pay
Dr.
fees.
Babbitt?
I'm sorry.
It's quite right.
Do I need to talk to you before I talk
yes,
to you?
Yes, it is custom and usage here, though,
okay.
To do that. Dr. Babbitt.
Okay. You actually pay fees to belong. One of the things about International Baccalaureate that's different, it is a continuous program, continuous improvement program. They're constantly monitoring the progress of your students and the progress of your teachers to make sure that you stay up to these high standards. They have very high standards, and we have high expectations for all of our kids. We're raising the bar for everybody. The primary years program, the middle years program, is not an elitist program. It is for every student in the school. But we are trying to raise the bar so that we have more kids that are prepared to take the diploma program when they get to be that age.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Rudolph.
Dr. Babbitt, your middle school's program, what years are they again?
Dr. Babbitt.
The middle school's program will be from grade 7 through 10. And part of that program, they will have to take, we started a world language in the primaries program in kindergarten. We'll start that next year. They'll have a second language. We've chosen Spanish because by the year, 2020, half of our country is going to be speaking Spanish, but all of our kids will speak Spanish. When they get to seventh grade, they take a survey course as part of the middle years program where they can take 4 weeks of Russian, 4 weeks of Spanish, 4 weeks of French, and then as an eighth grader, they have to make a decision which world language they're going to take for the next 3 or 4 years.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Babbitt, the middle school years, is that set by IBO or by you? Is it vary from school to school? I think more of middle school is fifth and sixth grade.
Dr. Babbitt.
That's set more by, I don't have a good answer for that. I think if you had a 5-8 program, you could probably have that as a middle school program. But we have a configuration that's K-6, so that's the primaries program. I do know of one program that's faster, middle school program, a middle years program at 8th grade. They do 7th and 8th grade. So it's possible it could be a 5-8.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if I have a question as much as a comment. I do have one question. Why am I not a co-author on this bill?
Welcome aboard.
I can do that, can I? I know more about AP than I do IB. And I was glad to hear the testimony where it sort of compared the two and how they can coexist together. I know the value of AP is incredible because I had a son who's somewhat smarter than I am, and he was in those courses. I could tell when there was a test coming because there would be 5 or 6 kids in our family room studying all night, whether it was calculus or history or whatever. But he got a whole year, a little bit more than a year of credit at Georgetown University because of the AP courses. And, of course, he didn't graduate early. He said, I get to take more. And that was kind of expensive. But a couple of years ago, I had a bill drafted. I went to an AP advisory board, and they suggested that we exempt AP IB courses from the standards because they're more rigorous and they actually learn more than what the standards require. And that bill got folded in. Representative Biskins was kind enough to just let that bill become part of the overall omnibus bill. And the thought struck me that as more and more students begin taking AP IB courses, that pretty soon you could have maybe 60-70% of the school being exempt from the standards. I'm not saying that's bad. It's a comment to throw out there, to kind of a FYI, what's going to happen because of that. That AP advisory board said, why isn't AP IB the standard rather than the exception? And I like the idea of trying to make it the norm rather than just for the elite.
Thank you, Representative Wardlaw. We do have, I believe, two individuals who had signed up to testify. If I can ask them to come forward, Alan Quist of EdWatch, Tom Pritchard of the Missile Family Council, if you can come forward, offer your testimony. And then if there's anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify, if you can just sort of move up toward the front so we can move you quickly into the testifiers' chairs. Welcome, gentlemen. Good to see you again, Mr. Quist.
Thank you, Chairman Mariani. If this had been 20 years ago, I would have been sitting on this committee because I was on the House Education Committee all 3 of my terms in the legislature. I enjoyed it immensely, and I'm sure everyone here enjoys it as well. I did serve in the Minnesota House from 1982 to 1988, and this is my first time back 19 years later to be part of the committee process at the House. I didn't anticipate ever doing this, but I think the stakes here are so high that I decided that I would. I today am adjunct professor of political science at Bethany Lutheran College, so I teach world politics, among other things. I also am a researcher and a writer, and you have, I think, a copy of the article that I submitted yesterday on International Baccalaureate. I think you have also a copy of what in political science we call the 12 Pillars of Freedom. And this is a summary of the American Creed. And as I'm going to mention here very briefly, EdWatch supports advanced placement and would encourage continued funding and and more funding of advanced placement. But EdWatch, and I speak here today for EdWatch, is opposed to international baccalaureates. And I would just mention very quickly to Representative Atkins, I did not realize that this was your maiden voyage here before this committee. And I would just remind you of another maiden voyage, that of the Titanic. And in that maiden voyage, the captain would have done well to slow down and make a course correction. Okay. And it is my suggestion that this money be funneled to AP, not to IB. And let me explain very briefly why that is the case. In the first place, if you, and you, I assume you already have this information. In the first place, insofar as being ready for college is concerned, and in terms of colleges accepting high school credits and so on and classes, you're much better off taking AP classes than you are IB. And I'm assuming you have this information. If you do not, EdWatch can supply it for you. But you have to go college by college, university by university, to see what these different colleges and universities accept. But insofar as college work is concerned, you're much better off in IP, in AP, than you are in IB. I'm assuming you also know the basics about the International Baccalaureate Program. I'm assuming you know that it's run by an NGO out of Geneva, Switzerland, that is in partnership with UNESCO. And I assume you know that IB is essentially today an arm of UNESCO, an arm of the United Nations. I'm assuming you have all this background information. And I think we have to recognize what an incredibly damning statement is being made here against American education. When we say that we need, for the case of rigor and coherence, that we have to bring in a UN NGO program instead of an American program. I can't imagine a more critical statement being made about American education. I think the committee needs to ask itself long and hard, why do we import a NGO of Geneva and a UN program instead of having an American program of education? You'll also notice that you did not have before you superintendents and principals who oppose IB. Let me tell you the reason. And it's just like when we opposed the profile of learning a few years ago, and our group was the group that provided the information that led to the repeal of the profile. Okay? And back then, you wouldn't have superintendents and principals coming in and testifying against the profile either. The reason was they were afraid for their jobs and their positions and their status. The same is true with ID. You will not have administrators coming in to testify against it because they feel it's the end of their career if they do. I assure you, EdWatch is in frequent contact with administrators and teachers who detest ID. But they will not come forward publicly, and so we are here to speak for them. Okay, why do we object to IB?
Mr. Quist, if I may just interrupt, and I do apologize for this, but as you know, we're constantly under time constraints here, so if I can ask you to briefly sum up, and then allow perhaps Mr. Pritchard to take a few comments, and so we can proceed. Thank you.
Okay, to briefly sum up, we oppose IB because it is contrary to the American creed. For that reason, it is un-American. Okay, and I ask you to look when you have a chance at the summary of the American creed that I have provided for you. Let me just mention one sense in which it is contrary to the American creed. Read my article, it goes into it in much more detail. International Baccalaureate officially endorses the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Okay? The Universal Declaration of Human Rights is contrary to the American Creed and is far inferior to the U.S. Bill of Rights. Why is that? It is because, and I quote, according to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and I quote, the rights that we're talking about, okay, life, liberty, speech, all these things, and I quote from the Declaration, These rights and freedoms may in no case be exercised contrary to the purposes and principles of the United Nations. What does that mean? What that means is that in the American system of government, read the Declaration of Independence, read the Constitution, our rights are here and government is down here. Our rights are higher than government. That's the way our government is organized. According to the UN Declaration of Human Rights, government is here and our rights are down here. According to the official documents and creeds of IBO, UNESCO, our rights play second fiddle to the United Nations. Okay? Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want to be very explicit about this because you have to know what the stakes are.
Mr. Quist, again, if I can ask you to just sum up. I'm afraid we're not going to have enough time to hear.
One sentence. The position that our rights are here and government is here is the foundation of freedom. Okay? The position that government is here and rights are underneath is the foundation of tyranny. That is part of the IBO creed. It's at the core of the creed. It is contrary to the American creed. It is un-American. Put your money in AP. AP is a wonderful program. You don't need UNESCO in our schools.
Thank you, Mr. Quist. Mr. Pritchard, I'm afraid you have about 2 minutes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tom Pritchard, President of the Minnesota Family Council. We have two major objections to IB. We support AP, but we object to IP. First of all, is the academic philosophical concerns. This is really the profile of learning all over again, fuzzy subjective standards. IB describes itself as an independent organization unfettered by individual national demands. School boards give up local control of their curriculum and grading when they sign on to IB. Their standards don't line up with the state education standards. The standards are set in Geneva, not in Minnesota. For instance, there's no course offered on American history under IB. Tests are graded in Europe under IB, while AP tests are graded here in the States. I don't know of any assessment showing the quality of IB programs. I do know that some university engineering programs will not accept IB, calculus, and physics courses because they are not rigorous enough. Why isn't IB rigorous? I think it's partly due to the focus of the curriculum. The mission of IB is to, quote, create young, caring young people who help to create a better and more peaceful world through intercultural understanding and respect. That's not a clear academic focus. There's a local, to also show the focus of the program, a local IB school has on its website, one of the key aims of knowledge theory is to identify values, beliefs, and biases underlying judgments and knowledge claims pertinent to issues. The class discusses difficult questions for which there are not absolute right or wrong answers. This is maybe an appropriate topic for a philosophy course, but not for an upper-level philosophy course, but not as the core philosophy behind a high school curriculum. There's one course in the IB program, the theory of knowledge.
Richard, I'm afraid I'm going to ask you to sum up here very quickly. Thank you.
I would just point out there's also, if you look at some of the courses, the books taught, they have an anti-religious focus, an anti-religious bias, and I think that should be problematic. And I think there's significant cost concerns. IB student costs the state 5 times more than the average AP student. Analysis of one school district found the cost for 30 juniors and 30 seniors was $1,800 per student per IB. It's probably a third to a quarter of that for AP courses. 97.5% of Minnesota's high school students or schools don't have IB programs. There are only 12 schools have IB, whereas there are 250 districts which have AP. You have limited resources. We believe you need to put it where it's going to get the most use and the most benefit, and that is clearly with AP, not IB. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pritchard. Are there any other individuals in the audience that wish to comment or testify for or against the bill? If you do, please come forward very quickly. Identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Chapin Hall. I'm Casey Garvey Hall's father. I was very excited to come down to have her testify today.
Pleasure to have you here, sir.
Thank you. Just a couple of minutes, just a couple of quick comments I'd like to have the committee understand. I'm a 1982 graduate of Yale University. I then came back to Minnesota and went to the William Mitchell College of Law. I've been a lawyer for 22 years since then. What I can tell you about the AP versus the IB, it's not an either-or kind of decision. And I think when people cast it that way, I really think that's doing a disservice to both. I think, as we've heard today, the IB program complements the AP program. And one of the ways that it does complement it is I think that the IB program is not just for super high achievers, the way the AP program kind of stacks up. The IB program is more accessible to mid-level students or even lower-level students, and what the IB program does is it teaches you how to think for yourself. It teaches you how to read and write and think and analyze and synthesize and pull different ideas together to reach your own conclusions, whereas the AP courses, and I'm not knocking AP. I took some AP courses. You know, my daughter took an AP course and got a 5 on the test, and what I can tell you is that what she's learning in high school is what I was learning about my sophomore year in college in terms of the rigor, in terms of taking information, synthesizing it, thinking for herself, being articulate, and how to put ideas down in a cohesive manner. One other thing I just want to say is my wife and my daughters and I are regular attenders at church. I've reviewed the IB. I've talked to my daughter extensively about the IB. It's not anti-religious. It's not anti-American. Having a worldview is an American view. My daughter's taken Chinese for 6 years. She's as a senior in Minnetonka, she's in her 6th year of Chinese. And we've talked about whether she wants to go into missionary work or work for the government or work for business. Her ability to understand that culture, exchange ideas, and engage in commerce and a respectful interchange of ideas, I think is good for Minnesota. I think it's good for the country. I think it's good for the world. And so it's not an either-or situation. They're complementary programs. And it's not an anti-American program. I guarantee you that my house is a patriotic house and a religious house, and IB doesn't undermine that. It supports that.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony, sir. And again, congratulations on being the proud father of a well-accomplished student. Representative Atkins, we're going to move here. Any closing comments or thoughts? Or
just 4 points, Mr. Chair, and they are brief. Just fact-based, the International Baccalaureate Organization does not own or manage any schools. The local school district and local school board continue to make all curriculum decisions. IB schools still use and meet state and local standards, and many higher ed institutions, both denominational and non-denominational, accept IB credits. With that, I appreciate your support for the bill.
Thank you. Members, the chair will renew his motion to have House File 804 be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee with a further recommendation that it be referred to the K-12 Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Representative Dabney, we have House File 1088. So, Dabney, if you could identify yourself for the record and put a motion on the table, I'd greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Jim Dabney. I'd like to move that House File 1088 be recommended to pass, referred to the Finance Committee with a further recommendation that it be referred to the Committee on K-12 Finance.
If I could just ask the audience to just kind of keep it down for a second. We do have further business we need to conduct. Representative Dabney moves House File 1088 be recommended to pass, referred to the Finance Committee for further recommendation, or something like that, to the K-12 Finance Committee. Representative,
however that goes, Mr.
Yes,
Chair.
I know. We have lots of long motions this year. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I and my testifiers will all attempt to be brief. I actually want to pick up where Mr. Hall just left off. talking about the AP and IB courses.
Representative Dabney, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt. Do you have an author's amendment that you wish to move?
Mr. Chair, you should not be sorry. You are right. I would like to move the 0086 amendment, and my apologies. For members, this amendment refines the accreditation expectations of the programs and of the higher education institutions that would be partnering with our K-12 institutions in the CIS program. So I'd like to move that amendment now.
Representative Dabney moves Amendment 807-00. Oh, wait a minute. Is this the right one?
0086.
Okay. And this is basically we'll put the bill in the form that you wish it to be debated here and considered here today.
That's correct, Mr.
All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, thank you for catching that. Mr. Hall's comments were that AP and IB are not an either-or matter. And what I want to speak to and hope to bring committee members to is to understand that the choices that we offer Minnesota high school students, the high-achieving and the high-aspiring students, AP, IB, PSEO, and CIS, none of those are either-or. But for different students, different schools, different school districts, different options make for a better fit. All provide options for rigor and challenge for the students. Different programs impact different schools, school districts, and individual students differently. I think the CIS program has a number of strengths, and today we've got a number of testifiers from the School Boards Association, high school instructors, and again, appearing for a second time today, real life students to talk about the CIS program. I'd like to start with the School Boards Association.
Representative Dabney, we have 35 minutes left in this committee hearing. I do apologize to you. The last bill took a little bit longer mm-hmm. than I had hoped. We do have two other quick bills that we want to get through today on related topics, so if I can ask the testifiers to keep that in mind and allow us to be able to finish our business, I would greatly appreciate it. Yes, sir, please.
Mr. Chair, my name is Kirk Schneidman. I'm on staff of the Minnesota School Boards Association, and we, too, would like to lend our support to this. This is an issue that came, and we're going to hear from Burnsville School District, some students and teachers there, but this is an issue that came from outstate Minnesota to us, to our association. From the school districts of Onamia, Melrose, and Rockford, they had heard from parents about this, heard from parents about concurrent enrollment programs, and they initiated and had one or two classes, and they want to expand that. They want to expand those options for their students. And I also want to emphasize what Representative Dabney talked about is the issue of more options for our students to meet their needs. And so MSBA certainly supports this effort by Representative Dabney, and this has taken place in a very short time frame. And we would have liked to have some people from outstate to testify on this issue, but we know that there's other committees coming forward. Hopefully that they can discuss that. So we would just like to lend our support, and I know when we have students in the House that that members love to hear their angle on things, so I will defer my time to those folks, and I just want to lend our support to this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Schneiderwin. And by the way, members, part of the reason why this moved quickly is I wanted to make sure we had a good contrast today in comparison with IBAP and CIS, believing that as Representative Dabney has indicated, that these are all viable options, so I thought for the committee it would be important to view them together. So why don't you proceed with the next testifiers?
It looks like they're standing in order. Mr. Chair, Ms. Cindy Chris from the MinSCU system.
Welcome, Ms. Chris. You identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Cindy Chris. I'm System Director for P16 Collaboration for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, a system that's very committed to partnering with P12 educators and schools and districts and a whole other array of partners in all kinds of ways to improve student preparation and transitions for college. But our focus today, in the interest of time and the bill, on PSEO and specifically the form of PSEO delivery that we call concurrent enrollment. The PSEO program in its entirety enables the Minnesota State Colleges and University System to provide thousands of high school students with access to quality higher education opportunities. In fiscal year 2006, our 32 colleges and universities enrolled nearly 20,000 high school students in their courses through PSEO. Of these, more than two-thirds, about 14,000 students, took courses under what the statute calls courses according to agreements. Most of these contract-based programs are programs that we define and that nationally in the literature are defined as concurrent enrollment. And that means that students are taking college and university classes in their high schools. The courses are taught by high school teachers who are approved by the college university, and they're mentored by college university faculty members. My colleague Sue Henderson, who will speak next, is going to talk about some of the benefits that the research shows for PSEO, so I will skip over my comments on that, again, in the interest of time. But I want to focus on this. Although we understand that many students and parents look to the value of earning free college credit through PSEO, and we recognize why that's so important to them, we recognize a number of additional advantages for PSEO and specifically concurrent enrollment. First, the courses that students take through PSEO, whether on a campus or in a high school, are the same courses taken by college students on the campus. They use college tests, they complete college assignments, and they're graded using multiple college assessments. So not a single test at the end, but assessments throughout the course. Secondly, PSEO courses taken on campuses and through concurrent enrollment offer rigorous learning opportunities. The vast majority of the credits earned are in key academic disciplines like composition and literature, mathematics, natural sciences, and social sciences. And a very significant proportion, I estimate about 25%, but perhaps higher because the way courses are defined and categorized for us, it's not entirely clear or consistent, we're in STEM disciplines, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And so others provide rigorous learning opportunities in career and technical education. Third, concurrent enrollment programs offer opportunities for professional development and growth for high school teachers, including building collegial relationships between high school and college or university instructors through periodic meetings and communications each semester, and developing shared understandings of college and work readiness. The system, our system is currently working to expand and enhance these opportunities. We're working right now on a new program next summer that will bring together high school teachers and college university faculty mentors from across our system together into a day and a half professional development opportunity at St. Cloud State. I'm sorry, Representative Erdahl is gone. I was going to tell him that the former President Brendan McDonald used to refer to it as the Mother Church of Higher Education. So Harvard of the Midwest, Mother Church of Higher Education. And finally, for some students, concurrent enrollment offers a supportive structure that helps them learn how to do college-level learning while still in a high school context. The academic work is as rigorous as that completed on a campus, but it's within a structure that's more familiar, comfortable, and supportive. And that brings me to my last point. And this would reiterate what I believe the chairman has already said, what Representative Dabney has said, what some of the other speakers have said. The key here is the students. Schools, high schools need to be able to allow students a whole array of rigorous learning opportunities, and students need opportunities to choose the ones that work best for them. I spoke to a colleague recently who works at the Department of Education who has a daughter who's about to graduate from high school with 2 full years of PSEO credit from Century College. Her younger daughter thought about doing PSEO, and they both agreed that it just didn't work for her. She needed a different kind of structure. She wasn't ready to be gone from the high school all day and from her high school friends all day. And so there are students and parents and programs figuring out what works best for students. So I just close by saying that the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities remain strongly committed to helping Minnesota students prepare for and successfully make the transition to college, regardless of when that transition begins. We believe that PSEO is a valuable and effective way to enhance student learning, and we're committed to continuing to work with our P-12 and higher ed partners to support and enhance the quality of PSEO teaching and learning.
Thank you, Ms. Crist, and I am excited to hear about the work that Minscu is doing in forming closer ties with our K-12 system in this regard. Thank you. Ms. Henderson.
And, Mr. Chair, two things quickly. Members will find a cheat sheet on concurrent enrollment in their packets this morning that they might want to refer to. And secondly, off of your last comment, Mr. Chair, I do think one of the strengths of concurrent enrollment of the CIS program is it does tie together our K-12 sites with higher education sites and in a meaningful relationship there for the students.
Very well. Okay. Thank you. Ms. Henderson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Susan Henderson. I'm Director of College in the Schools at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities Campus. We use College in the Schools as the name of our program, but it's also used in a generic sense just to mean the second by contract kind of a PSEO program. I want to be here to promote evidence-based policy. I want to point out some facts. Cindy also has already mentioned the great scope of concurrent enrollment in Minnesota. In 2004-05, we conducted a survey, we being the Minnesota Concurrent Enrollment Partnership, that showed that, and this is on the back of your fact sheet, that showed that I think over 95,000 transcripted credits were earned in 2004-05 by high school students. It's a big program, a very well-used option. A second point I would like to make is that as policymakers, you always are having to think about efficiencies, about what programs provide the most bang for the buck, what is the best investment for state dollars. And I want to point out that the College in the Schools model gives you a great bang for your buck, because it not only provides students with the opportunity to study at the college level and earn college credit, but it also provides terrific professional development for teachers. So I want at the College in the Schools program at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities, in 2005-06, our program provided each teacher an average of 22 hours of discipline-specific, university-based professional development, in which teachers work with the content, the pedagogy, and the assessment of the courses. I'd actually like to correct it, but we don't just provide this professional development, we require it, and not just once. But every time, as long as a teacher teaches for the university CIS program, they are required to participate in these professional development workshops. So they do that every year, 22 hours every year. Last year, that meant that 171 teachers received that. I want to clear up another point I want to make is I want to clear up a common misconception about concurrent enrollment. I often hear that concurrent enrollment is a great idea, but the credits earned don't transfer out of Minnesota. And I would like to tell you that that is simply not true. Our program at the university surveys students every year. 1 year after they've graduated from high school, we ask them, are you in college? If so, where? Did you try to transfer your university credits? And if so, what happened? We have consistently, over the last 6 or 7 years, found that about 95 to 97% of our survey respondents were able to have their credit recognized, which means it counted towards graduation credits or exempted them from required courses at their college or allowed them to be placed in an advanced course. In the last 3 years, we have a list of colleges. In the last 3 years, students have had their university credits recognized coast to coast at 165 different colleges. That I hope that will put that misconception to rest.
Thank you. Ms. Henderson, I'm going to ask you to sum up here so we can get our other testifiers in. But thank you for addressing that issue directly.
Thank you. I would like to emphasize that concurrent enrollment provides a great variety of courses, more breadth than either AP or IB. so that our program at the university has a course that's targeted right at ELL students for a basic writing. We have agronomy courses. We have animal science courses as well as the other more traditional. And then I would like to end by saying that quality is ensured in a number of ways. As Cindy mentioned, the faculty from the colleges oversee all the teaching. Also, there's an accreditation process by the National Alliance of Concurrent Enrollment Partnerships that once a program demonstrates that they meet or exceed those standards, they are accredited. This guarantees that the courses offered at the high school are the same as offered on the college campus.
Thank you, Ms. Henderson. I believe next we have Mary Lenhart. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Lenhart.
Thank you. My name is Mary Lenhart. I'm a teacher at Burnsville High School. I started teaching advanced placed American government and politics in 1990 and switched to college and the schools in 1998. I'm here to talk mostly about my experience and how invigorating becoming part of the University of Minnesota as an adjunct professor and what that did to the last part of my career. But I want to begin by sharing a few comments from our principal who was not able to be with us today. She wanted to have me make a few comments about financial impact college and the schools have on our school. The cost of tuition, just to be clear, and textbooks is borne by our school. Transportation to the required field day is covered by our school, and the students also donate some of the money. Our teacher staff days are also covered by our school district or also donated by our teachers. Burnsville High School students have earned 3,737 University of Minnesota credits during the 2004 and 05, 05 and 06 school years, for a cost of $120,732. Why? Why does Burnsville High School do it? Because it's good for the students and it's good for the staff. The costs, the benefits outweigh the costs. The tuition that we pay is over $900,000 less than the cost for regular tuition at the University of Minnesota, and parents thank us for that. In addition, it's difficult to put a price tag on the experience for the students and the staff. CIS has benefits that cannot be duplicated in PSEO or AP. Students stay on campus. You're going to hear from two of our students in just a minute, and you'll be able to recognize firsthand why we're so happy as staff people to have them on our campus and not become involved in PSEO. They're role models. They're involved in all kinds of activities. AP classes do indeed offer rigor. There's no question about that. But the opportunity to earn college credit is based on one single test. I have taken many, many college courses, and never have I been in a class where the stakes are all based on one test on one day. College and schools classes are near the university classes because they are university classes. The university selects and trains the staff, as Susan Henderson has just talked about. We meet with our colleagues in political science 3 to 4 times a year. These are absolutely marvelous sessions. They're well planned. They include all kinds of things. We have part of our time, we compare syllabi, we compare best practices in teaching. Many times the university will provide some of their most recent research on best practices so that we who are actually delivering the class have an opportunity to discuss them. But the most exciting part of our staff development is that we get to meet with the university professors. I know many of you are teachers, and you know teachers, and you know that high school teachers often go into high school teaching because we have a passion for our subject matter. Yet the constraints of high school do not allow us to be most up-to-date in research. So visiting with the university professors allows us that kind of input. This has been a program that has been invigorating and affirming to young teachers as well. I've mentored many young teachers in college and in schools, and frequently they tell me, this is why I stay in teaching, because I have an opportunity to have my intellect and my passion affirmed by this fantastic research institution that's right here in the Minneapolis area. So I want to end by telling you that this is a fantastic program, one of many opportunities that I hope that you will support for our young and very talented students and expand this opportunity to more students. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lenhart. We have Alex Christensen and Jenna Johnson, who are students at Burnsville High School. If they can come down.
Hi, my name is Jenna Johnson, and I am a senior at Burnsville High School. This semester alone, I am earning 12 credits through concurrent enrollment at the University of Minnesota in classes such as economics, American literature, and French. Had CIS not been offered at my high school, I can confidently say that I would have left to pursue an education through PSEO. Because the same classes that are offered on the U of M campus are offered on my high school campus, I was able to remain and participate in many extracurriculars such as Science Club, Academic Quiz Bowl, and Mathly. I have been able to experience my senior year of high school while taking academically challenging courses. One of my friends took the PSEO option, and his biggest regret lies with the fact that he is not on the high school campus and he is not able to participate in many extracurriculars due to his situation. Because of my experiences in concurrent enrollment, I currently have 32 credits at the U of M, all of which can be transferred to almost any college in the nation. I urge you to support this legislation. In reference to previous testimony, this program is thoroughly American. Not only that, but it keeps outstanding students on their high school campuses. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Is this Alice Christensen?
Yes.
Welcome, Alice.
Mr. Chair, we'll have one more brief testifier after Alex.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and members. I'm here today because in the last 2 years, as I've been enrolled in the college and the school's programs, I have seen a dramatic shift in my education. With this newfound rigorous coursework, I have been enticed to think, not just to memorize facts, and I have been introduced to college education. If I accepted my admission at Iowa State University today, I would start with 28 credits, not testing out of 28 credits, but with 28 actual credits. This embraces opportunities to start programs like engineering earlier. Remember that South Korea produces as many engineers as the entire United States, with one-tenth of the population. I won't have to spend $2,000 on introductory world language courses because I'm already taking them free at Burnsville High School. The program tempers me to college life. I can take strenuous classes on the high school campus to make me feel more comfortable in college. It's the best of both worlds. And we students don't just learn in one way. Facts crammed down our throat, even voluntarily, doesn't always work. Even just in me, I cycle between types of education that work best. The only place I can get an education with the breadth to reach the visual kids, the hands-on kids, and the fact-in-the-throat kids is in college and the schools. My grade being recognized post-secondarily doesn't need to just rest on the fulcrum of a test, but on the skyscraper-like foundation of research papers, field days, debates, and higher-order thinking skills. I've taken AP and college and the schools classes jointly, and the rigor that has left me proverbially on the treadmill, getting me ready for college life, isn't AP, but it's CIS. AP tests monies go to New Jersey, IB to Europe, but college in the school stays in Minnesota, and I'm very comfortable with professors at the U of M setting my curriculum. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Christensen. I believe we have one final.
And Mr. Chair, since the issue of acceptance of credits has come up, if I could get assistance from a page. I've got the list of 165 colleges and universities around the United States that have accepted CIS credits that could be distributed to the committee at this time.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
My name is Mara Corey, and I'm a high school English teacher at Irondale. There are a few areas that I really want to cover here. One is the idea of the advanced placement versus the CIS. We have both at my school. I've actually taught both at my school. Whenever we have a budget crunch, we always talk about tossing out the CIS and keeping the AP because the AP is funded by the state and the CIS is not. And so our school bears the whole brunt of that. I would hate for that program to be cut. We always have students and parents who come to school board meetings saying, please don't cut this program. This program is the reason that my kid is school. The advanced placement courses at my school for the language and composition and literature and composition are both considered lead-in classes, that is, prelude classes for the CIS classes. So if those earn college credit and the CIS are college credit, I think that lets you know how important that program is and how rigorous it is. My students write papers in a variety of disciplines so that they're prepared to write in college, not write 40-minute essays that will be, you know, rushed through where they're given a topic to write about. They actually choose what they want to write about under rigorous standards, and they compose them in anthropology, in science, and in social science, and in arts and humanities. Another thing that I wanted to talk about that my colleague had mentioned was young teachers who come into teaching and decide very quickly, this is too much to handle. 50% of our teachers, actually I believe the numbers are between 47 and 49% of our young teachers, leave teaching within the first 5 years. That's frightening. I think the only reason that I'm still a high school teacher today is because I have the opportunity to teach the CIS, College in the Schools, courses. One more thing, and that is that one of my students last year went on to Harvard, and when he got there, they told him that they would not take his AP credits, they would not take his CIS credits, because of course they want him to take their freshman courses. And when he went to his professor and he said, this assignment that you're having us do, my high school English teacher had us do something similar. Can I bring in my work? And, of course, he was kind of a klutzy kid, so it's not very organized. He brought his whole portfolio, and he figured he'd just find it in front of the professor. Started flipping through the portfolio, and his professor said, if you would like to submit that as your final for this freshman composition course, you don't have to do any additional work. For their Harvard freshman composition course. So I just think that you need to understand how valuable this course is, and if at all possible, help us fund it.
Thank you, Ms. Corey. Representative Abney, I'm told by counsel here that our staff that the amendment that you offered needs a little bit of fixing.
Oops.
And I'm wondering if Ms. Larson, if you can explain that for Representative Abney and the committee.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dabney, it's a small change. In your original bill on page 2, lines 6 to 8, you have language that's being inserted in your amendment as subdivision 1. So what we need to do is we need to delete the language on page 2, lines 6 to 8 in the original bill, and we should do that by amending the amendment. So on the document A07-0086, on page 1, after line 18, insert page 2, comma, delete lines 6 to 8.
Representative Dabney, would you make that motion?
I would like to move that amendment as Ms. Larson described, please.
Any discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Your amendment to the amendment is adopted. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify for or against the bill in the audience? Members, we do ask the members who have questions. It is my intent to continue, regardless of the time, to finish the bills that we have scheduled for ourselves. Where's my list? Here we go. Representative Erickson and Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. Representative Dabney, what's the policy issue we're supposed to be debating in regard to your bill? Would you explain that, please?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I don't know if it's as much a policy issue as eventually becomes a funding issue. The state and the governor's proposal this year supports AP, supports IB, does not provide the same financial support to CIS, to concurrent enrollment, as it does those other classes. And as I started my comments with, and I think the chair reinforced, different kids, different schools, different school districts, different programs yield a better fit. And I think what we're looking for here is a recognition of that, the importance of choice and the need for a level playing field so that we can find that fit that best works for our highest firing and high achieving students.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Representative Dabney, in your amendment on line 13, because let me preface that by saying when Lisa Larson referred to Section 1, Subdivision 1, and we fixed that language from your original bill, the verbs are encouraged, are used, and then in the next section on eligibility in lines 13 and 14, there's the statement that, well, you have to show clear evidence that it's of a comparable standard. Do you know how that's going to be measured? Because since you're just encouraging accreditation, then I think that's the policy issue here. How do we justify, or how does the school district justify, that this is a course of comparable value?
Representative Dabney. Mr. Chair, if I can ask Ms. Chris to come forward and speak to this. As I read the amendment to the bill, it actually strengthens the requirement on accreditation by setting a deadline of 2011 for institutions to be moving forward on that, something that is not in current statute. Ms. Chris.
Yeah. This language to be encouraged, and I think it is on line 13.
And while Ms. Chris considers that, thank you, Representative Erickson. I think it's a good inquiry in terms of the purview of this committee. Ms. Chris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, excuse me. First of all, I think the term encouraged is used in the first paragraph because I don't believe it was Representative Dabney's, nor it would be the legislature's intent to require all concurrent enrollment providers in Minnesota to seek NACEP accreditation. As I understood the bill, it was to encourage that, to seek to move ahead with NACEP, which was designed to provide a kind of consistent quality standard so that it could be more readily seen as concurrent enrollment seen as having consistent quality the way AP and IB are. I believe in subdivision 2, the idea of the language is to add to the encouragement, if you will, of achieving that quality standard by tying funding to courses offered by NACEP-accredited institutions, but to give you some options to recognize quality in other ways. Given the short timeline of all of this, I don't think anybody has thought through how institutions would show evidence of quality in another way, and that's something that would need to be further discussed and developed.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Christ, we don't know yet whether it would be the school district or the post-secondary institution that would determine the evidence of comparable standard. Is that what you're telling us?
Ms. Chris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, yes, that's correct.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chairman Mariani, and this is actually to Ms. Chris as well. I think that this program that is raising some concerns in a school district that I represent for the fact that they're having issues trying to get Minsky to agree to which teachers are accredited or which teachers can actually teach the courses, and I believe that they've looked at, for instance, science or math and found out that only one teacher in their entire school district is able to teach it because of the requirements. Can you tell me, are they working through the issues of what are the requirements of the instructors to teach the concurrent enrollment?
Ms. Chris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Welty, thank you for asking that question because I was going to address that in my remarks and I forgot to do that. Many of you are aware that there's been some controversy in last year about the qualifications of faculty. All of our institutions, of course, are regionally accredited by the Higher Learning Commission, which sets some expectations for the qualifications of faculty that offer our courses. So we take those standards very seriously. And that and some other issues raised by some of our faculty led us to look very closely at what our expectations and eventually requirements are for the credentials of the high school teachers teaching the courses. The common standard in any higher ed institutions is at least a master's in the discipline or any master's with some credits in the discipline. But we recognize that holding a degree is not the only way to measure one's ability to successfully teach and communicate high-level, high-quality college-level coursework. So we've been working with a task force that includes high school teachers, counselors, and principals, and they will actually be here for a meeting of our task force on Thursday. So should this bill be heard on Thursday before Representative Breiling's committee, which I think may be a possibility if I understand it, if this committee moves it forward today, we'll be able to bring some of those folks along with us to talk about it. But what we're looking at is setting as a general standard the same standards that our institutions currently use, which for two-year institutions would be the master's in the discipline or a master's plus 16 credits. and at a university process of each college within the university, looking at the person's record of scholarship, the credential that they hold, and their record of teaching and making a decision. But what we also expect to include in our procedural language to guide this is for exceptions to be made that would allow an institution to look at those high school teachers, look at their record of teaching, look at their advanced coursework, regardless of whether it includes a master's in the discipline, look at other relevant experience, and then approve those folks to teach concurrent enrollment based on their total review of their credentials.
Representative Walty.
Thank you, Chairman Mariani. And just to follow up on that, I would encourage you to hold the high standards, but also take into account that there are probably going to be many school districts out there that will not be able to have the faculty and staff meeting those high standards that you currently have if you don't allow some exception to that rule. So I would just encourage you to work through that task force and come up with something that will work so schools all across the state of Minnesota can offer the concurrent enrollment.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is along the same lines. Very, very quickly, the National Alliance for Concurrent Enrollment, do we currently have a standard for college professors and or college teachers' aides that help in college courses, a lot of the freshman courses and stuff we have? Do we currently have a standard for that in the state for colleges offering, say, for example, teachers' assistants or whatever that sometimes teach courses?
Quickly, Ms. Chris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, I don't believe we do. As I said, in our system, we have standards for our two-year institutions. They're derived from some long-standing standards that I think differentiated two-year institutions when they were still within the school district structure from the high school instructors. And, of course, two-year institutions don't have graduate assistants. But I'm not aware of any national standards for faculty or graduate assistants.
Mr. Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we allow the colleges or the secondary institutions to set their own standards in terms of the teaching professionals they have?
Ms. Chris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, if I'm following your, I'm not sure I'm following your question. As I said, in our system, we have consistent standards that have been adopted for our two-year institutions, and they're differentiated by the area of teaching. For example, in some of our career and tech ed fields, a master's degree is not required. It's a bachelor's degree plus a certain number of years of relevant experience in the field. In our state universities, the generally accepted standard is the doctorate in the field, either a PhD or an EdD. But again, colleges within the university have some leeway to review the credentials of the person they're going to hire and make a hiring decision accordingly.
Mr. Chair, if I could, quick comment. I guess, and maybe we'll expound on this further, Representative Dabney, maybe in the next committee due to time constraints. I have a concern about looking at standards of teaching excellence when we have the individual colleges offering these courses within the schools. And I think they, when they put their name, whether it's Southwest State University, whether it's St. Cloud State, whether it's the University of Minnesota, they put their name in that concurrent enrollment course. I would like to think they would hold up a standard on their own, and I'm not sure it's necessary for us to tell them what they have for teachers. Something we can talk about. Last question I have is college and schools, the terminology, we've been using it all along, but the amendment deletes it, Representative Dabney. Are we getting away from that term?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer. Concurrent enrollment is the dry bureaucratic technical term that I chose to adopt instead.
Thank you. Members, I would like to vote on this bill. We do have a couple other members, unless there's something super pressing. Thank you for the last series of questions, Representative Demmer. Representative Dabney, any closing thoughts?
Mr. Chair, just a short vignette. Yesterday I was in my office and a lobbyist walked in, not one who lobbies on education issues. He said, what you doing tomorrow on CIS? I talked a little bit. He said, excellent. He said, my daughter just graduated last year from high school after taking CIS classes. For her, it was perfect. She was an involved and passionate athlete at both the varsity and club level. She wanted to stay in the high school and have those opportunities. She did it. It was a great fit. She got straight A's all the way along, even though she knew that she might get one grade for her high school, for the class, the CIS class for the high school, and a different grade for college. She got straight A's. She's now gotten 18 credits and is accepted at St. Thomas. My son had done the IB program. That's what worked for him. CIS is what worked for her. It's a great program. We loved it as a family.
So, Debbie, thank you for offering this additional option to the governor's proposal. I think there's good complementarity. I think that's the word. Representative Dabney renews his motion that House File 1088, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee with a recommendation to be referred to the... I run out of breath on these. With a recommendation that it be referred to the... K-12 Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you. Representative Bingham, House File 417. The Chair moves House File 417 be recommended to pass, referred to the Finance Committee with a recommendation that it be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Committee. Representative Bingham, I apologize to you about going over in time here. You and I had a conversation about your bill yesterday, and I had slipped my mind that we had the same testifiers on the first bill as your bill, and I apologize to you and the testifiers to hold us over in that way. Representative Bingham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. First off, if Representative Erdahl is still in here, I'd like to say Winona State is the Harvard of the Midwest, which is where I went.
Representative Bingham, I believe one of them is Yale and one of them is Harvard. We'll have to check that out.
We
so.
May have to refer this to the task force.
There we go.
Yeah.
Representative Bingham.
I want to remind you that we had Representative Atkins and a lot of the testifiers here talking about the International Baccalaureate Program, and you've heard about the benefits for the program. And the bill before you establishes a pilot program for the elementary and middle school years. And myself, along with the co-authors of Atkins, Hansen, Representative Abler, and Representative Greiling, are going to do our part for the rigorous education process that the governor spoke highly of. So with that, I'm going to introduce the testifiers.
Dr. Babbitt, welcome
Dr.
back.
And the principal of Lincoln Center, Ms. Garvin.
Ms. Garvin?
Garland.
Garland, I apologize. Welcome to the committee. As you know, we're pressed for time, so brevity will be a high premium for us. Dr. Babbitt.
That you probably would like to hear from in this, and I'm going to turn it over to my able colleague, Ms. Connie Garling, who is the principal of Lincoln Center, and she will speak, and we'll try and be very brief, recognizing the time pressure. We'll let you catch up, maybe.
I appreciate that. Welcome, Principal Garland.
Thank you very much. Lincoln Center Elementary School in South St. Paul is a very large school. I have a kindergarten through sixth grade place with 875 children that come through my doors every day. What we have been able to do with the beginning of the IB program in a very efficient and very effective way is to change the culture of our public school, which is not an easy task. Schools can't look the way that they have when I went to school, even. Children that attend our schools have access to more information today than ever. We create the conditions for children to work collaboratively in my elementary school. They ask and answer complicated questions. They understand more than one language and live with integrity and solve complex problems. The Primary Years Program of International Baccalaureate does these things for our very youngest children. It's proven to increase students' achievement, and the purpose for the Primary Years Program and the Middle Years Programs to be developed was to prompt more children to engage themselves as they get to high school in those advanced kinds of programs that you've been hearing so much about this morning. Students, even at the youngest ages, are specifically taught their role in social action, and in your role, you clearly know how important it is to give back to your neighborhoods and your communities. We will be providing an additional language in our Primary Years Program, as is required, and we know that research shows that the linguistic and academic benefits of multi-language learning are huge. There's unparalleled accountability in this kind of educational program, both internal and external, and it is more stringent than any individual state might have. However, I do want you to understand that when we create our units of inquiry, we base these units on Minnesota state standards, There's a firm grounding in United States history, and in fact, our elementary kids leave with a deeper understanding of who we are as Americans than they ever did before. And I would highly encourage you in the information that you've received from the South St. Paul Public Schools, the very fancy folder that you got earlier, that there is a myth and fact sheet, a buff-colored sheet that might give you a little bit more information regarding some testimony that you heard earlier today. The kinds of things that we do in our schools is relevant. It is rigorous. We use real-life information for our kids. The results are clear, as research does show a decreased achievement gap when we have our kids engaged in this kind of learning. And we know that achievement gap reduces when we can build clear relationships with our students. And the kinds of training and the kind of expert work that our teachers are able to provide help to build those relationships and decrease that gap. And finally, the model that we would like to create in the South St. Paul Public Schools, the K-12 model, we think we can be a model because we are small. We only have two elementary schools and one junior senior high. And it would be a way of public education that we can actually put our arms around to show, to prove our growth and to prove how this program could work in other places, because we're not a huge district and we haven't received any outside funding. We've been growing our own and doing the best that we can. So I would highly encourage you to support any kind of efforts that would help us in international baccalaureate, specifically primary years, middle years programs.
Thank you, Ms. Garland. We have a question from Representative Gutwald.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll make it quick. Just two questions. One is, if you did this district-wide in 2004, your school board supported it, why is the state looking at funding South St. Paul? And then kind of a related question to that, if I could, Mr. Chair, why are we not looking at other models? If we're looking at a pilot program for the state of Minnesota, we know that districts are different across the state. Why aren't we doing an RFP and looking for maybe a couple of different districts, maybe one rural and one metro area school district or some model like that? Why are we funding just one?
Dr. Babbitt.
Well, I think that's probably a good question. We are looking at it because we are going to do this with or without, we believe so strongly in it, we're trying to do it. It is expensive to start up. The costs are expensive. We had looked at, and we would welcome the Commissioner of Education to pick another school to join us, outstate or whatever. We would have no problem with that. But we know we can deliver, and we would like to be the first. But we certainly would have no objection to somebody else, more than one school coming on with that. We do this a little differently than some of the other schools, too. I think we need to say right now, for our diploma program, we allow students to, some schools, it's either you're in the diploma program or you're not. You're all IB or you're not. 40% of our students take at least one class. My daughter, for example, chose just to be a certificate. She got three different certificates, which amounted to, I think, 17 or 18 college course credits at Augsburg. She had, and so depending upon the interest of the student and the IB program, when you get to the diploma program, is very rigorous, and it's not everybody can do the K-12, or the whole part of that program. So, but we would welcome some other schools that would like to do that.
Thank you, Dr. Babbitt. And part of my thinking in terms of these bills, too, is we don't know what the final factors are going to be in terms of putting together investments in IB and AP. And so I wanted to make sure, encourage our policy committees to at least forward several options for the K-12 Finance Committee to deliberate on. And so therefore the purpose of the Bingham and Hillstrom bill. Quickly, Dr. Babbitt.
Just and the reason that we probably came to South St. Paul is we're taking the governor at his word. We were at the MSBA conference where he spoke this fall, and he said, if we have a school out there that's willing to try something new, well, we've been working on it, but we are willing to do something different, and we are willing to make a systemic change and give us an attempt. That's why we're doing this.
Mr. Chair, just one follow-up. What is it with the state funding, if that were approved, what is it that you would be doing different?
Dr. Babbitt, quickly.
From what you're doing now?
Well, the state funding it would help us provide for some of the things that are above and beyond. For example, we would start, it's going to cost us $1.5 FTEs for world language in one of our elementary schools, 1.6 in the other. So three more teachers is going to cost us for that. We have a coordinator at each elementary school right now. They're full-time. So we're looking at a cost above and beyond what we would normally do for personnel, and some of the things to make sure that we have continuous progress, continuous growth, is in the neighborhood of $350,000 to $450,000 per year, above and beyond what we would normally spend.
Members, the chair renews his motion that House File 417 be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee with a recommendation that it be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Thank you, testifiers and Representative Bingham. Senator Hillstrom, House File 233. The chair will move House File 233 be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee for re-referral to the K-12 Finance Committee. Representative Hillstrom, I think we have a similar bill to the Bingham bill. If you can speak to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have no testifiers. I'll be happy to know. I told them to stay home because you had a very full committee hearing today. The purpose of House File 233 is to designate the Brooklyn Center School District, District 286, as a pilot project for IB. The Brooklyn Center School District has one elementary school and one high school, and so we would be able to have an entire district that would have implemented IB. This would require that a report come back to the commissioner, and each year the district would have to report for what they did for the curriculum, what they did with the money. The Brooklyn Center School District is a neat district to use because it's much like the city of Minneapolis. And rather than just picking one or two schools in Minneapolis, we would have the ability to do an entire district and evaluate IB. So that's the reason for the bill, Mr. Chair, and I hope that you will vote in favor of it. Thank you.
Questions from members? Are there any individuals? Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hillstrom, the previous testifiers talked about their unique school district in terms of low socioeconomic clientele and highly diverse. Would you explain the dynamics in your school district?
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Dietrich. The Brooklyn Center School District is very unique in that I believe we are now at 80% poverty. We are over 50% minority. We have a high population of ELL. We have a high rate of mobility. The number one reason for the mobility in our district is eviction from our apartment complexes. And we are now number one in teen pregnancy, and we are struggling to pass levies. We've had four levies fail, and we are down to $300 on the property taxes to fund our operations. And so this is a school district who has had some challenges to overcome, and this would be a great opportunity for us.
Are there any testifiers in the audience for or against the bill? Members, again, my thinking on this was to be able to have some options before the K-12 Finance Committee in this area, as we don't know whether we're going to bite off on the big IB approach. Frankly, I hope that we do. And so I want to be able to keep these different options before us as we move along in the session. The chair renews his motion that House File 233 be recommended to pass and refer to the Finance Committee with a recommendation that it be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Committee. All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Thank you, members. We are adjourned until Thursday.